My name is Michael Hogan, and you are listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Scars of a mind game never show. We're never gonna be alone again. We're never gonna let them know we're enemies. Love is not a friend. Fight to the end.
Hi, okay. Everyone, and welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, number 128. Today we are at Indie PopCon 2016. If you guys aren't familiar with us, you can find us on Twitter at NATW Podcast. Obviously, we are a Teen Wolf podcast. And today we are joined by Michael Hogan. Gerard Argent, pretty yes. exciting.
Yes, it is pretty exciting. Kill them. Kill them all.
I have a feeling this is going to be great for, like, audio snippets.
Now, it's going to sound a little foolish in 2016 to ask, but what exactly makes a podcast a podcast? I have never done a podcast before. Oh. Obviously, I've done things that might have ended up on a podcast, but what is it?
Well, it's basically just an audio recording that mm-hmm. we put out into the world. For us specifically, it's just a bunch of friends talking about Teen Wolf.
Right.
Very laid back. Sometimes we do interviews. Sometimes we do live episodes like this one or ones where you can actually see us, Google Hangouts and that sort of thing.
Oh. We've done episode audio commentaries as well. We did the one at San Diego Comic-Con last year where we were there while Teen Wolf was airing. So we did a live commentary as the episode was airing as well. So that was
Were the Teen Wolf people there? They must have been
at San Diego Comic Con. Yeah, we've been up to set a couple of times as well, which has been quite fun.
In Sherman Oaks. They're in a new studio now. Have you been up to the new studio?
Right, yeah, we haven't been to the new one yet.
Which is even further north than...
hopefully. And,
which means it's a bit colder than when we're shooting nights.
You know? Yes, I can imagine.
And I'm not complaining about it. Hey, I'm Canadian, so it's fine. That's right, yeah. It's this old Canadian can't complain when you're shooting at middle of the night or 5 a.m. and it's so cold and I why do we do this and what am I doing here? And you realize there's a couple of naked men fighting there, so, and they're not complaining, so might as well just go with it. How's that? Is this what you're talking about in podcasts?
Yes.
Am I ever
naked men?
We can rewind and you can erase all this stuff.
No, this is
mistakes
great.
Are making later, right?
I just wanted to introduce ourselves really quick. You're totally fine. We've been doing this podcast for about 3.5-4 years now, pretty much.
Almost four years.
So we've talked about Teen Wolf a lot, so please check us out if you are interested. And my name is Karen, and I'm joined by Danya.
Hi.
Danya, that's a beautiful name.
Thank you.
Where's that? Is it Welsh?
It is not Welsh. My dad's Italian, so it's from Done. His.
So because I heard someone say something about Wales to you about a couple minutes ago. I didn't mistake it for Welsh myself.
No. Grew up, born in Wales, currently living in England, which has been an interesting experience.
Ooh, born in Wales, though.
Yeah, born
that's
in
where
Wales.
That comes from. Wow. Jeez. How did that feel? Okay.
All right. So please start us off.
Yeah. So how have you been liking the convention so far? Have you had any interesting fan reactions over the weekend? Or
I probably have, and they will occur to me during this podcast, but nothing jumps out at me. It has been fun to do. I haven't done a lot of these lately. So when people come up and talk about the Teen Wolf or Battlestar Galactica, I'm so proud of both those shows and love doing them. Yeah. And I sincerely mean that. It's not just saying this for the Teen Wolf podcast. It's a walk down memory lane when they think, oh, man, I totally forgot about that. So, and the memories of Teen Wolf because I've, as you know, that they brought me aboard in season two. And we shot in Atlanta, so I've got a lot of memories over that get brought up here at these events.
And that kind of transitions into my next question, just, you know, how did you get started with Teen Wolf? How did that whole process kind of go?
It came out of the blue for me. They were looking for, Jeff was looking for someone to play Gerard, and he's a Battlestar Galactica fan, and he heard that Michael Hogan was available and asked, and that's basically how it happened. And I don't know if I could, I think they gave me down in Atlanta the CDs of the first season, the DVDs of the first season. But it was interesting watching them. Wow. I could, in doing press with Teen Wolf, you know, with something else, you say, well, I'll give it a few episodes and it'll catch you, et cetera, et cetera. But I would say, if Teen Wolf, well, whether it's your cup of tea or not, or your genre, put on the first episode, and if you can shut it off, go ahead, because it just picks you up and away it goes. It was so exciting to be there at the beginning. I think I've been acting this many years because I'm a research junkie. I think over the years you get to play all of these different things and go into these different walks of life and head spaces and political ideals. But in Teen Wolf, like, how do you research a Teen Wolf and how do you – a wolf, werewolves, and how do you research werewolf hunters? And when I was down in Atlanta, I was at the university library and looking all over the place for stuff on werewolves. I couldn't find anything, and as I was walking out, there was a book on a new releases rack, and it said "The Last Werewolf" by Glenn Duncan, and there was this an amazing page turner that had all my research right there. But it's interesting that, you know, how do you research or what? Because werewolves, it's all made up, like it's not a real thing. But you can, in fact, get or hear heated arguments by brilliant people over lycanthropy. So it's an interesting thing to be thrown into. I love it.
I think we've probably had some of those arguments on the podcast as well.
But you're a believer, you see.
We did our own a little bit of research, actually. It was well after we started recapping the show, but we looked at all of the different mythologies all around the world and discussed them and, you know, the similarities, the differences, and it was really interesting, actually. It was a lot of fun.
You know, as an actor, you got to watch out. You don't get too far into it, because I'm playing Gerard, and I'm not responsible for anything other than the interpretation that I'm given, and it's interesting that you don't get too far into it. But I am the beast of Gévaudan. I mean Jeff Davis is, all of this is research. He doesn't make this stuff out of. I mean, there's lycanthropy, et cetera, but I mean, the beast of Gévaudan is an actual. There is an actual beast of Gévaudan. There is a maid of Gévaudan. It's fascinating. So all of it, he's like, you know, there's the Noah Hawleys and the Ron Moores, and I'm going to leave someone out here to say, you never mentioned me, Hogan. But Jeff Davis is a genius. He's a true, incredible writer, producer, showrunner.
And speaking of Gerard, of course, you know, how has that role evolved for you over the years? Because, you know, do you have a different perspective on him now than you did in season two, or do you still feel like he's the same man?
No, I have a different... Well, of course I have a different perspective on him, because when you come in fresh, you know, you talk to Jeff or the writers and do as much research as you can, and then see, and you don't get rehearsal time. So, you know, I met my granddaughter and my son on set, and you know, you meet the characters once you hear action and hear those lines. So you kind of make it up and react to their input. And as you know, when I first came on, it's at a funeral. And when that's when old Grandpa is back, which was kind of cool, because it's almost like meeting my granddaughter for the first time. And so, of course, then over the years, I get to know more about the character and more about the character's history, and the writers tend to write for the characters. So it has changed. And there's wonderful scenes when I'm in the home and the book, when I open the book and tell the history. That Jeff decided to research and do that and put it in front of me as Gerard. So when I read that stuff and then we shoot it, I'm learning it. It's brand new, so I'm looking at it with new eyes again. So, and the same with the last season. It's all new, so yeah, I'm looking at it different now. And yeah.
Do you view Gerard as a bad guy, or do you feel like he's doing what's needed?
He's doing what's needed. Absolutely doing what's needed. There, kill them. Kill them all. This needs to be done. Simple as that. He's not a bad guy at all. Over the years, I found it interesting because I've played all kinds of things, and I was acting for 37 years before Battlestar Galactica came along. But my exposure in the world, of course, grew with Battlestar Galactica. And years ago, I went to audition for a film I did with Graham Greene called Clear Cut up in Northern Ontario, which is where I'm from. I played the mill manager, and Graham's kind of a native spirit that we go at it. He kidnaps me, because I'm a mill manager, mill owner. When I went into audition, the director said, "Yeah, okay, now you are the bad guy, and we're doing this." And I said, "But bad guy, what do you mean? Because I run a company that makes paper." He said, "Yeah, you're in this." And I said, "Well, do you use toilet paper? What do you mean? The guy who runs this industry, it certainly doesn't see him. He sees himself as just part of the fabric of society. And if I'm going to be an actor portraying this role, I'm certainly not looking at him as a bad guy. I mean, maybe later on when we see the movie, I think, well, you're a bad guy, but you're not a bad guy." And the same with I think why Gerard is so convincing, et cetera, and once it's brilliant writing. But this is what has to be done. Even a wonderful scene when I don't know when it was, but that scene in front of the school, is it, or whatever, or the hospital, I think, where I stab Scott, and then just sort of rub his hair, and I don't know if I could rub his head, because I think initially, I can't remember, it was so long ago, but I think when I was talking to him, then I just rubbed his hair, but I don't think I could, because his hair was made up, right, so he sort of, oh, okay, I can't do that, but anyways, he did something else, and then tipped my hat to the lady as I'm walking away. That needs to be done, because this has to be done. It's not a bad guy, but he has fun doing it,
I think it's the best thing about like a good conflicting force in any series or movie is when they kind of see themselves as the heroes of their own story.
Yes.
So that's always what makes it so convincing, and that's when I get most invested in those characters as well. Mm-hmm. Because whether you like Gerard or you don't like Gerard, you have, or some people have, like an investment in his character, and for me, he's a character that I kind of love to hate,
yes.
Almost. Like, yeah. So it's always such a good feeling. Though.
Yeah, no, and I know exactly what you're saying, and that's the brilliance of Jeff and people like that. I mean, and as the longer the series goes on, I'll go back to Battlestar Galactica, where initially I know that people just hated Ty, just hated him, and went, oh, well, he's the XO. This is what he does. This is who he is. And with all his frailties, people came to be, that's the one that they love most of all these people, because you got to see inside this guy. He's not a bad guy. He's just doing what he's doing. And anyway, I don't want to get sidetracked on that, but Gerard's in not the same character, but yeah.
How about just when you've been on set in general, do you prefer jumping in and out and doing guest spots, or have you preferred doing like the season-long arc better?
I have never Well, actually, Cold Squad. I did a couple seasons of a show called Cold Squad that we did in Canada on the West Coast. Actually, it's CTV in Canada. Actually, it got stolen. It's a Cold Case. Do you have an American series called Cold Case or something like that? Mm-hmm. But if you watch that, that's exactly they took it and did it down here, and the CTV in Canada tried to say you can't. You're doing exactly what we're doing. Of course, it's big American network, and they said, yeah, whatever, and go ahead. But that was an episodic where you kind of did a different version of the same thing every week. We went into the vaults and took out Cold because of DNA. Coming on board, and now it would be crazy. You could resolve these old cases. Battlestar Galactica was like a movie that took us 5 years to shoot. It just kept going. You didn't have to start all over again every week. But I think, you know, I have had done some... We are in the golden age of television, and I sure have been lucky in the stuff that I've been able to do... I think I'm just think my answer through here. I think I love doing from show to show, doing these different characters. You know, it's financially very insecure. I mean, we've been doing this for so long. We've been doing it since 1969. You know, we've raised kids and grandkids and houses and blah blah blah. But you know, you get fat, and when we're fat, everybody's fat. And then if not, here we go. But there's no life like it. But doing these, the guest spots, the arcs in these shows, like the 12 Monkeys, what a fun arc that was, and Fargo, what an interesting and fun and lovely experience that was. And it's something you can just be so proud of the work, because I'm a journeyman actor. It's like a carpenter, a woodworker, where if you want a cabinet made in this certain way, I'm really good at it. I'll make this cabinet. I'm good at this finisher. I'm good at this. So these people who know my work now, Noah Hawley saw this and went, hey, let's get Hogan to do this. Jeff went, oh, let's get Hogan to do this. Terry Matias said, oh, let's get Hogan to come in and do the monkey. Let's get it, because knowing my work. And it's interesting, Terry Matias brought me aboard 12 Monkeys. And when I got on set, he said, hey, you know what it is, man? He said, I want you to do this. He said, the reason why I wanted you was because he's with Sci-Fi Network, and I can't remember if he did something on Battlestar or not, but he was there when a bunch of us in the cast and crew saw a screening of the finale of Battlestar Galactica at a big theater here in Los Angeles. And it was neat because, you know, I've grown up I'm a theater actor. So you don't have closing night parties in theaters. You have wrap parties where you're so drunk nobody can hear each other anyway. But, closing nights, you have closing night parties. So the screening of the finale, we had felt like a closing night party. And it happens to be that Terry Matias was around at that time. And he said, Hogan, you know, I was fascinated by the way you are Thai, and then to party with you and hang out with you later. You got this sense of humor in your blah, blah. So that's why I was brought aboard 12 Monkeys. So it was interesting doing that arc, because I'm free to go, oh, okay, let's go. Let's go. So I think, whatever, who knows? I say all this, and then you go, the next time we see each other, I said, oh, you're a regular in a cop show, eh? But that's, I love them. Just guesting in things and doing arcs. Mm-hmm.
And speaking of Teen Wolf, of course, you know, are there any moments on set or any scenes in particular that really stand out in your mind?
Well, I should have thought of that before, but not off the top of my head. I loved the writing that Jeff did for me. I mean, the very first scenes I did were down in Atlanta, but they shoot outside Atlanta, and it's the Hale House down by the river, mm-hmm. And we shot next to the river. And the first scene I did was with the broadsword and slicing the kill them all, and I did that whole speech and all of that scene. 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning beside that river. I'm from Canada, man. I grew up in Northern Ontario. I'm one of those ice fishermen who stand on a frozen lake in the middle of the winter and keep my beer next to my skin so it doesn't freeze. And well, you get cold into the core. And I was so cold that night there. And then Hogan, they pull me out of my honey wagon and say, okay, you're up. The scene's up there. And go, okay. So I did all of that scene. Very cold. And nights, right?
And so I cut the wolf in half and did that long speech. But that certainly sticks out in my mind. Of course, I went back and I enjoyed it all in the long run. But when I was bitching to someone, I guess back in Canada, I said, you know, and nights, man. Nights. I hate shooting nights. And he said, Hogan, werewolves, right? You're going to be shooting nights, man. Do the math, right?
So. So that, you know, that's going to say that stand out, but then I'm going to think, geez, I should think of other ones that are more happy, but I don't mean that to be a sad memory.
No, I mean, that scene, I think, for fans, too, really sticks out.
Do you know the one that sticks out for me? After Victoria has died, and then Gerard goes and sits with Alison on the bed with the letter and stuff and gives her the letter. Mm. That one always sticks out for me as being a particularly strong scene.
Yeah.
And when he goes to talk to her straight after that, that one I really liked a lot.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a neat scene. It was
because it was so understated as well, because obviously there's so many fantastical elements inside Teen Wolf, but that one was a much quieter scene, very understated, and I really enjoyed that one a lot.
And I think just in general, Gerard's scenes stick out because it's a character you can sort of revel in, and I'm sure you do that, and we do that as fans, because you do love to hate him, and he can be so, like, such a big presence, and you're like, oh my God, what is he going to do next? And that scene where he cuts the werewolf in half, it's absolutely shocking, and you're just like, I can't believe he just did that after we meet him. And you know,
yes,
it's just,
that's right. The grandpa comes back and introduces him. Hi, I'm your grandpa. It's so nice to see you. You're right. What a gift. What a gift.
And then what I wanted to ask too was, you know, being asked back for season 5, you know, what was that like, especially since Gerard's role now is a bit more active. He's not just sitting in the wheelchair anymore, you know, he's up
spewing
and he's moving
black
around.
Blood and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know, what genre is this? Science fiction or what it is? But, I mean, you have the freedom to bring all of these characters back, you know. So go ahead, you know, how many times have you died in this? Because I know I do keep in touch with Jeff, and he's always so busy that it's very. But he'd love the fact that whenever we can, you know, when we shot I shot second season in Atlanta. That was great because he had time to hang out. I brought him to see we went to see. I can't remember what it was, a symphony. And we had time to actually hang out, and he could focus, and we became good friends there at that time. It's almost like we didn't go on a road trip, but you spend time together. If you go on a road trip, you're in a car for a few hours, and you can talk away, and then you can go, oh, you know what you said about 20 minutes ago about Mom or whatever. So we got close down there. That was pretty cool. And so I have stayed in touch with them. I'll have lunch with them when we're down here. I'll go up to visit set. We'll quickly have coffee. But Jeff has his hands on everything, as opposed to that second season where he was busy. Now, like, he has his hands on every script. And you know the ones that Jeff wrote. He's like, oh, Jeffrey Davis wrote this. It's like doing Battlestar Galactica. All the writing's great, but the ones you'd go, oh, Ron Moore. Jeff's very much like that. And so it was always, you know, Jeffrey said, we're trying to bring Gerard back in, et cetera. He did say on this one, coming back in season 5, they were thinking we're going to have him back in 5 this, 5 that, whatever the episode's number. And he said, they're trying to figure out a way to. And when I got the script, and it was just like a walk down memory lane. It was, oh, here we go back into the saddle again. Look at this. It's when he's there. And then when my son comes in
with the flowers, and whatever the surprise, oh, a nice surprise or whatever, and look out when he reaches over and he slowly takes the flower out, and Gerard doesn't say what are in like this. He says almost like, you son of a bitch. It's almost like, how long have you had that? Which means he could have brought it any time.
Yeah.
How long have you had that? That's only Jeff Davis comes up with that shit. And then he throws it in the floor. And Drew Jordan down and eats the flower, man. And they went down to Chinatown and got an edible flower. Because, you know, you shoot so much and there's never time to really sit in. So it's always like last minute. It's kind of like, you know, the cutting the werewolf in half. Right from the beginning, even season five, it's like, you know, I thought, oh, we're going to kill a werewolf. Well, I guess it's going to kill it with a knife or something earlier. And then we go on and take, we've all blocked it. We got, okay, and ready, good. And they say, Hogan, and they, so then the broadsword's over there. Yeah, broadsword, but that's it. You kill him with this broadsword? Like the things are 10 pounds or 15 pounds, right? Like, whoa. So you kill him with the broadsword. And the same with, like, okay, this is, we got an edible fire. And we put it down and he throws down. But sure enough, it is edible. So down he goes and eats the flower. And then the beast of Gévaudan, he's on his feet. Like, it was pretty easy to bring a dead guy back, right?
Yeah. And I mean,
the Bête de Gévaudan.
Yeah, Jeff loves his entrances as well, and he's done that time and time again. And Gerard's has been really good.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, d'accord, I agree. You know, I did. When I got the thing of the beast of Gévaudan, I got the script. Of course, no one told me how it's pronounced or whatever. I didn't have time to really properly research. And even when you research, it never doesn't say how you're going to pronounce it. And so they flew me down and picked me up at the LAX. And there's a driver of the limo service that they use. You know, I'm talking to him because it's about an hour or so, a long way up to Sherman Oaks, wherever my hotel was, even further, Thousand Oaks, I think. And so you talk. I always talk to these guys, and he had a French accent, and talking to me, and said, "So, how'd you end up getting here? He mail order bride, or internet?" And he ended up the relationship. He had flew her over to Paris because he's from Paris. He had a restaurant, but his accent's pretty hard to tell exactly what. And he's in the front, and I'm in the back. And as he's telling me, I'm thinking, "Oh, okay." So then I said, so how would you pronounce, I don't know how, like I didn't want to throw him off, how would you pronounce Gévaudan or A-I-N? And he said, what is it? Where is it? What is it? What is it? I said, well, that doesn't matter what it is. Because I don't want to get him confused, right?
Right.
But so it went back and forth. I kept trying to change the story. And he said, it could be. But anyways, finally, I said, you know what, man? When you drop me off at the hotel, I'll show it to you. So we get out of the hotel. And this is after an hour of change. And I finally said, okay, here it is. There it is. And he puts his glass on and he goes, Gévaudan! That's the Gévaudan! That's what it is, Gévaudan! Right? That's how I got the pronunciation of that name. Right? And of course, on set, one of the producers there was setting it up, and then one of the sound guys, somebody said something. So how do you pronounce that that thing? And I said, Gévaudan! Gévaudan! Oh, I guess he knows. See, you just bullshit it. You just say it out. And they think, oh, he knows.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So obviously you made your triumphant return in season five, but prior to that, when Jeff initially contacted you, did you have any theories about how Gerard might come back?
No.
No?
No, not at all. And no, because you got to be pretty close to the show. And I was off it for quite a while, and they go in directions that I don't know. At one point, I'd be meeting, you know, sporadically talking to Jefferson. I said, you know, loop me in on the scripts because I'd love to just read them, right, as you're writing them.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, that's great. So he did. I don't know what season this is. That's right. So he did for a couple. But there's just so much going on there that they were thinking, what are you going to email that to Hogan? Even though it's on a loop, right, on the whatever you call that. So I don't really know how you would want I would have no ideas of how you would bring him back, because how do I know what's going on in the story right now? Right?
Yeah.
That's a pretty lame answer. I don't know.
No,
I'll tell you why I don't
answer.
Know. Because I don't know.
No, it's fair enough. But obviously, through season five, we obviously get that betrayal with Chris. So how do you think Gerard will react to that betrayal from season five?
You know, I would like now to cite non-disclosure agreements. Because whether one does know or not, all you would do is say, maybe this would happen or maybe that would happen. But I have no idea how he is going to resolve that. And the other thing, too, is I don't know. Of course, it's a podcast, so you just assume everybody is up to date on everything. And spoilers, well, that's too bad for you. You grab the discs and watch it, I guess, right? In terms of, you think, do people know that what's happened in season five? Obviously they do. It's aired. I'll tell you what I missed her when my granddaughter was back for The Maid of Gévaudan. What a great show that one was, huh?
Yeah.
It's like a movie unto its own. Jeez. Mm-hmm. But we didn't cross paths on set.
Oh, yeah, I heard she didn't really see anybody while she was there, unfortunately. They shot it pretty separate. And
yes, they have a couple stages going there, plus the locations.
Right.
So there's a lot of shooting going on, and I don't know how they do it. Man, wow. They got so much going on, and it's not a huge budget. Of course, you shouldn't tell people that, right? Oh, they got a lot of money, and you can see it there on the screen, that's for sure. I'm like, oh, this is a bed de Gévaudan.
Speaking of Chris and Gerard, though, of course, you know, given the betrayal and everything, do you personally hope that they can mend their relationship, or do you think it's unsalvageable? Do you think that it's not worth it?
I would say, as an actor, as two artists in this industry, or however you say it, your story was, I'm not sure, but I do think it would be interesting to have us reunite, and it would be interesting to have reunite because we have to work together sometimes, you know, like when he came and brought me the flower power. it's almost like, you know, the next time when that happened and the standoff, it'd be interesting to, I don't know how the Teen Wolf brass would bring us together, but even if we are not getting along, we're there under duress and have to work it out. That would be interesting to see that. I think it would be a bit late in the game to say, "Oh man, you know what? I really, really like you now." I never did, but now you're cool, man. Ever since you ate that, or whatever, ever since you shot me, I don't know what happened. I see the light, and you're really cool, son. So that's that. So obviously, it'd be good to bring them together and get over it.
Right.
Because what can happen, too, is if you go through enough after that happened, you go, wow, you can even forget about that. And if you start thinking about it, think, don't even go there, man. Like, what? It's over with. That's it. What's the point? It's like relationships, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's such a strong focus of the show, too, the familial relationships between parents and their children. And some of them are great. Some of them are very steady, like, you know, Scott and his mother. But then you have the relationships like Gerard and Chris, which are a little more complicated, but that also adds to the show. It adds conflict, and you need conflict to have it.
And also reality. You know, I don't know if nobody here remembers Leave It to Beaver, but I think that show, the perfect family, et cetera, I think it kind of ruined North America, because all think, mom should be like that, and dad should be like that, and I should be this way. That's just not real. People don't get along like that.
Right.
And I think it's great, the relationships within, the dynamics within that show, in friends and relationships and the betrayals and the saving each other's backs and covering each other's backs and then losing them and people leaving and coming back. That's life. Mm-hmm. It's right there.
Definitely.
And when you got a canvas as big as werewolves being part of fabric, and over the arc of the show to have the town start to accept them, would you have believed that in season one? You know, once you watch season one, you think, whoa, Scott's mother's going to come this far? Or whoever, and Stilinski, Stiles and Stilinski, you know, in the season two, you've been going, you can't pitch that to the writer's room. They'll never go with that. So the sky's the limit, or whatever you say. There must be a better way, a wittier and smarter way to put it. But you can do anything, because we've pushed the boundary so far now that it, provided it's done with commitment, and you go, oh, God, look at that. There.
And speaking of doing anything, would you like your character to become a supernatural creature, or would you prefer him to stay human?
I have to invoke the non-disclosure. I don't know. I think it'd be the words. Jeff and the writer's room, I keep saying Jeff because we're so close. But I mean everybody in that writer's room. What they put in Gerard's mouth, I think would be more interesting to have him have a whirlwind of a vocabulary or mind that handles all of these things, as opposed to it being a physical. But it being Teen Wolf, it probably would be. But I don't think about a superhero. I think he's just a bit long in the tooth for that. Long in the tooth, werewolf. I didn't mean that.
But yeah.
Actually, that's really witty. We should stop right there. Hogan says Gerard is too long in the tooth to be a werewolf. Cut. Scene.
I think we have our episode
smart.
Title.
Yeah.
But you know,
I didn't know
he
was so smart.
That's fair too, because humans are necessary on a show like Teen Wolf as well. I mean, I think that's why a lot of us like Styles. Styles is great for a lot of different reasons, but he's also an access point to the show. You know, we can relate to him. It's hard to relate to Scott given everything that he can do, his supernatural powers. But, you know, humans are just as necessary as the supernatural in a show like this.
Yeah, I think it would be more credible. Even though, I mean, I loved the fact when there was that fight and I put the Kalian's eyes out. Oh, man, you're talking about fun scenes. And then, okay, there. The thing is, I forgot all this. And now they said, I remember when I put the Kalian's eyes out. And, how cool. But like, so that's good. Even though you think, he's a senior citizen. He can't have a fight with the Kalian or this. But sure enough, I mean, I've certainly done enough of that. And it really looks like, holy shit, he's done. And now it's just all camera. But it certainly was a neat fight to do in those fights. And so it doesn't mean that you know, Gerard shouldn't be physical and shouldn't be surprise people by going, oh, yeah? Here, why don't we take a little walk here? Let's go here. Take a look at this. Wham. But, yeah, I think the vocabulary in that would be... Deucalion. Eyeballs. Fire.
So continuing to look at look ahead at future seasons, if they were to bring in a new Argent character, what kind of character would you like to see? Or would you like to see them bring back a character that's deceased?
An Argent? That, of course, then you mean like bring them back as though it's possible to bring characters back from the dead? Or
I mean...
Or what? Someone that has gone away and come back?
Either. Anything. Sky's the limit.
Yeah. I don't know. Did we ever say what happened to my wife? To my son's mother?
No.
No.
We don't know anything about that. Oh.
Jeff... Are you listening? Do you listen to these podcasts? I know you probably do them, but where's my wife? And what does she... Look at me. Look at JR. Who would we cast as my wife? C'est ça, là, oui. De Javadage. C'est bon. That's good.
So now we're going to have to throw that out.
Yeah.
So Twitter and stuff, like, who would we cast?
We could do it.
Or who would she be? Not necessarily, forget the casting, because you can do that later. Like, who would that be? Like, where did that happen? Why is she not around? And, you know, we bring a character back from the past. It could certainly, all of a sudden, you look and I could go, oh, no. Ah, no. she's back. And, you know, JR would love it. Mummy's back. You know, because he always was a mummy's boy anyway. Oh. There was the problem.
That would add some conflict.
Yeah, that would add some serious conflict.
Archer? Archery? Good question. Oh, you guys are smart. You should do something. Oh, you're doing something. We're doing it now.
We should do a podcast.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You should have your own show. Oh, you do have your own show. Is this show fully cast?
Is there anything else you would like to explore with the character, though? Like, obviously,
I would like to. I can't say that I have thought of that, you know? I mean, I think if I was with the show all the time, I could say, yeah, you know, I've been burning for Gerard to do this or to do that. So I have to say, I can't. There's nothing that comes to mind right now. But anything that they've thrown at Gerard of since the beginning of the second season, etc., has always been intriguing. And I would look forward to see where they would like to go with him again, because they could come up with way better things than I could say, you know. We did a bit of his quoting Shakespeare or whatever, or poetry, I don't know how much of it kept it in there. I'm not saying that I want him to be a Shakespeare-spouting guy, but there certainly would be some interesting things for him to quote things from the earlier werewolf days and go more maybe into where all this began, because I really did enjoy doing that thing of the book and showing the history of it. When we read that at the home,
yes.
So maybe explore more of that. I wouldn't mind going back more into some of that literature that he would just say,
that would definitely.
Here's what it is, yeah.
Okay, well, our final question is a question that we've asked many times, both to each other and to the other cast members that we have had on the show. Mm-hmm. And it is the last question that we asked ourselves on our very first episode of this podcast, which is, if you were offered the bite in real life, you, Michael Hogan, would you take it?
Offered the what?
The bite.
The bite?
The werewolf
bite. Gee, Winnaker Willies. I think, well, it dates me, doesn't it? Gee, Winnaker Willies. Holy teapot. You got to be kidding me. Well, it depends on who I'm biting, I think. Who would I bite?
Or who would be giving you the bite?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That depends. Therefore.
That's true. I mean, I would not accept the bite from Peter. Let's be real. Okay. That would never happen.
But
did anyone accept the bite from Peter willingly?
I'm not sure.
No. I mean, yeah. As the actor, then you have to play all of that stuff. So practically, if that's what you're asking, like, is the actor playing that role, would you accept the bite? No. But that's a knee-jerk reaction, because you've surprised me with the question. Right? Look at the repercussions of the bite.
That's true. I always felt that if you were offered the bite, if you knew about the supernatural, it would be almost the responsible thing to do, to take it, to try to be like Scott, you know, to try to help save people.
Use it for good. But sure, that's a good idea, but it never really ends
that invites
that
a lot
way.
Of trouble, though.
That's right. Yeah, I think I'll just do the best that I possibly can as a normal human being. Then not. So thanks for giving me the time to answer that question, because after this, thinking about it for this long, no. Absolutely fracking not. No.
That was probably the smart answer.
Thank you.
We're pretty close to our time, but I wanted to know if anybody had one or two questions, if there was anything you guys wanted to ask. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
On Battlestar Galactica, you worked with established actors, you know, Edward James Olmos and such. But on Teen Wolf, the cast was very new.
Yeah.
So what is that like? Is there any difference? Is the energy different?
Yeah, the energy is certainly different. And I guess, yeah, the energy is definitely different because they are a lot younger. That's an interesting question. It's funny. A fascinating question like that. About 10 minutes from now, I'll go, oh, okay, you know what? Eddie and I, when we were doing Battlestar, we fell into stride pretty quick because we're basically got the same amount of experience and time. His is very high profile experience, but we're roughly the same age, and we both knew what was going on there. And Mary as well, that age. The people are younger people in the cast. Had no idea how amazing it was what they were doing. Now I'm still going to think of this question all the time, you know. I was so removed as Gerard from the rest of that cast, and there wasn't a lot. I said it as it is. There was not much interacting. Kill them all. This is what you're going to do, etc. You know, I kind of overruled any of them except for my daughter, I think, and even my son.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for being on another Teen Wolf podcast. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, guys.
Scene. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jeez, you guys are good.